You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are Talking
While Married.
Well, as I sit down with a nice hot cup of coffee with a little bit of Italian sweet cream, I thought I'd just talk about some of the tragedy of California very briefly with you.
Okay.
You know, the new numbers coming out of Northern California in the Camp Fire is 138,000 acres burned, only 38% contained, but they said they're getting better. 10,320 structures completely destroyed, including 8,850 homes, and we're at 56 deaths. The highest death toll, the highest structures burned in the history of the state. You know, what more can that state take?
Well, this is certainly a tragedy, and I just found out this evening that my aunt and uncle, along with our friend Bob and Connie, our friends Bob and Connie, that lost their home in
Paradise,
that my aunt and uncle, who are in their late 80s, live there, and I don't know if they've been found, and I don't know if they've lost their home, but I'm quite sure they lost their home because virtually everybody did in that town.
Well, I'm a little worried about my dear old friend, Dick Kerr, retired United States Air Force, who I've known for years, lived up in a mobile home park up there. I tried to reach out to people that know Dick. I haven't heard anything back, so I'm just praying that he's okay, but I'm sure his mobile home park and his house were completely destroyed.
Yeah, it's just a huge tragedy. I mean, between the shooting at the Country Western Bar.
Correct.
And then the fires right on top of that.
And Malibu, you know, Thousand Oaks.
Well, and, you know, it's interesting because we're hearing a lot about the movie stars who are worried about their homes and about the ones that have, a few have lost them, certainly. And that seems to be what the news likes to report. But there are a lot of just everyday
working Joes,
real people out there, living life, and they've lost everything.
Well, you know, our hearts and our prayers go out to these people. But, you know, and then followed up with the election, and I just don't, of course, I do understand how Californians failed to repeal their horrendous gas tax. And it's because of the way that the wording was that just totally confused everybody.
But it was purposely deceptive.
That's right. And you know, when I hang that on the lieutenant governor and the secretary of state, those are the people that are supposed to be the oversight people for the legislation and how that legislation is written. And it was intentional to confuse everybody. And, you know, I'm reminded that just yesterday we were in Houston, Texas, and we paid $2.19 for a gallon of gas, and if we would have gotten a car wash, it would have been $1.99. And the cheapest gas that you can find in California is $3.69. And in some places, especially like where the fires are, you know, they're gouging them, and you're looking at gas for $4.50 and up.
Well, even in Southern California, it was $3.99 or so
for a long time.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So, yeah, their gas tax is ridiculous. And I know that the majority of Californians wanted that repealed, but the way that it was written on the ballot made them feel that they were voting against having road work done.
Correct. And, you know, that's not the first time that type of deceptive legislation has been put on the ballot. Now, they've done that for so many things, you know.
Well, it's so many things. It's virtually in every election run that they have measures on the ballot that they are misstated, and they're made to be something that they're not, and they actually don't even use the money for the things that they say that they're going to use the money for.
Yeah, I think that hurts the most because, you know, and I mean, just talking about not just Texas, but all the states that lead to California when you go west. So Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, Nevada, All of those states have much better road systems than California does, much less, in almost zero graffiti, much less litter, a heck of a lot fewer potholes. I mean, the roads are absolutely great until you cross the border at Needles and you get into the state of California. And then as soon as you get into California, you can see a demonstrative difference in the quality of the roads, meaning the poor quality of the roads.
No, that's absolutely true. I could tell you with my eyes closed when we crossed the border.
Exactly.
Because the roads are so much different. The best roads that I've been on is Texas.
I agree with you.
Texas keeps their roads amazingly clean and amazingly well kept up and free of potholes. And
free of graffiti. You know, go see the overpasses when you're in the major freeway centers, and you don't see any graffiti on the columns and everything that hold up those overpasses, as opposed to California, where it's nothing but graffiti. Just drive into Los Angeles and take a look at that. You know, you can't even see the paint on the cement.
You know, you can drive the 10 freeway all the way from Texas to California, and virtually the entire way, you will not see a piece of road junk on the road, on the highway.
Correct.
Something that you could run into, run over, get a flat tire. You just don't see it. They are kept up really, really well until you get into California, and then it's a different story. So the fact that they charge so much more for their gas so that they can maintain their roads is a big bunch of hooey.
It really is. I think it all goes to pensions, and you know, I think Caltrans is completely out of control. You know, speaking of things that happened in the last election, I just saw where the Democrat legislature in the state of California got the supermajority. So now they are veto proof. So that means that anything that the Republicans set forth, or anything that they don't like that the Democrats have set forth in legislation, there's nothing they can do about it, because now the Democrats just laugh at them because they've got the supermajority, and they picked up a couple of more state Senate seats out in the Central Valley, where my mom and dad and I, you know, we all had a ranch out there, and it used to be a very conservative agricultural ranching area, that entire region, and it's completely turned over, and it's, you know, some of those areas are just nothing but solid blue.
Well, you know, it's going to be too late by the time that the people of California realize what they've done to the state. It's going to be too late to fix it. And so many people are seeing it and leaving California. So you really have a lot of the people that are supporting that tax base there that is paying for all the people that are taking from the tax base. The people supporting it are leaving. And that is a recipe for disaster. I don't know how they're going to handle that. And by the way, just as an aside, you know, we have all these caravans coming up from Mexico right now.
And there, a lot of them are heading towards Tijuana.
Well, they're,
and you
heading,
know why.
They're heading towards California, even though it's much further for them to go than is Texas, because they want that sanctuary state policy. They want to be free to do what they want. They want to get on the welfare system. They want to get the schooling. They want to get the medical. So good for them, because I'm glad that they're not coming this way to Texas. But
they're still breaching our country.
And
I know you're being facetious.
And by the way, once they get into California, they can go anywhere in the country they want. So there is no wall in California. So they can go to any state. So it doesn't matter where they enter. They can go wherever they want.
Yeah.
And it's really a shame, because it will affect everybody. But again, with California, I just saw today, in fact, that just the city of Los Angeles has had a 38% increase in homeless people living on the streets. I mean, that's a huge number there. It was huge to start with.
Well, you know, part of the problem is, and I've said this before, and I'm not saying it to be facetious, I'm saying it to be factual. When you have tens of thousands, as a matter of fact, hundreds of thousands of people breaching our gate and coming into our country with no education, no job skills, no work sets, you know, skill sets to work, except to do very, very general labor, Not everybody can wash your car. Not everybody can be scab labor on a construction site. Not everybody can do your lawn or can work in a restaurant. And so you do get tens of thousands of people that are unable to work, and they become homeless. They get on government subsidized housing, and it's just a huge drain. $22 billion this past year in the state of California spent on nothing but illegal aliens. And what could that money be spent on? You know, that's the rhetorical question.
Well, and we just had a conversation about that over a half a million have been stopped at the border, but a lot of those people get in because they have the catch and release program. So they disappear into the fabric of our country, never to be seen again. But they're still drawing from
social services, exactly.
And what I also have learned is that it takes two more generations of those people for that third generation to come along and start even contributing to society. So we're carrying people on our backs for many, many years, probably 50 years, before other people start getting where they can contribute to the American society. And by the way, it is not the best of the people of the countries. It's not the best of the Guatemalans. It's not the best of the Hondurans that are coming up and crossing the border illegally. It is more the worst of them. We don't know what we're getting. We don't know who we're getting. We don't know their criminal records. We don't know their skills.
Well, you know, just and look at the drugs that are coming in as well. You know, at one of the border stops, I can't remember which one it was, whether it was Texas or California. And, you know, just this last weekend, and I think it was one of the Texas border crossings, they intercepted over $500,000 worth of illegal drugs. And that's happening all the time.
Well, that was just this weekend, just in one place. And just think of how many places they can come over the border and how much are they not catching. And by the way, that is ruining people's lives and families. It's destroying lives and destroying families, all those drugs that are coming in.
Well, it's certainly not helping all of the unfortunate Americans that are stuck in the opioid crisis, and we're losing, I think, what did they say, 50 people at least a day, overdoses on heroin, that we're losing that. And, you know, if we looked at that every single day, losing about 50 people to overdose, what would that be? You know, we talk about active shooters, and, you know, they're killing, you know, 10 people or 12 people, and everybody goes nuts, and they should go nuts for that. But just think of that. I mean, 50 people every single day in the United States dying from a drug overdose.
Well,
absolutely amazing.
These seizures happen to be cocaine, but still, what you get from this is you get more crime. You get more crimes on property, crimes of opportunity, burglaries, robberies, those types of things, in order for people to buy the drugs. Then you get crimes that people commit while they're high. And you have the destruction of these families, which is tragic.
And not to mention, you know, the drug cartels shooting and killing each other, the drug gangs in the United States shooting and killing each other, MS-13 shooting and killing everybody, and, you know, the crimes of violence way up. So this really needs to come to a halt. The thing that really bothered me today, and, you know, I even wrote about that on America Out Loud in one of my columns, which was a fictional account, is they're already crossing over the top, climbing over the wall right now in California, the part of the wall that's down at the beach, mm-hmm. and just basically just taunting the Border Patrol, daring them to do something to them.
Right. They're extremely emboldened. And we have a lot of liberal attorneys and groups down there, right there ready to stand and help them get over.
Facilitating. You know, yeah. I saw something today where a group from San Antonio, Texas is down there and, you know, driving people up to the border and doing everything they can to get those people across to the United States. That's the United States group, you know, conspiring to break United States laws to get people illegally into this country. It's absolutely disgraceful.
This is another situation like California where America will realize too late that what they did was the wrong thing to do, and it's going to be too late because we are changing the face of America. Look at England. Look at Belgium.
Look at France.
These are countries that decided to let everybody in, and they are permanently and forever changed, and not for the better. And it's not about race. It's about people that don't assimilate and don't take on the values and really just take over the lives.
Well, they don't play by the rules.
No.
And we are all the children of immigrants, and we all played by the rules. And I think people, I know I am, I'm extremely offended by the whole thing. My parents, right off the boat from Italy, worked very, very hard to become naturalized citizens. I know your folks from Holland did the same thing.
Yes.
So there we go. Well, did you catch the news about that controversial attorney for Stormy Daniels, Michael Avenatti, getting popped for DV, domestic violence, in Los Angeles by LAPD?
I did see that. And you know, sometimes there just is some justice in the world.
Isn't karma interesting?
It is.
And I love his quote, "I'm innocent, this is totally bogus," right? So remember his standard of proof with now Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh that was, you know, he said, "Hey, I'm innocent. All of these allegations are unfounded. This is bogus." The difference is Avenatti was quick to say he's guilty as hell. Nobody should ever treat a woman like that. Yada, yada, yada. Now the shoe is on the other foot. Instead of sexual assault, we've got domestic assault. And, you know, of course, he's completely innocent. And all these charges are bogus. And I'm kind of relishing the fact that he's sitting in an L.A. County jail. Actually, L.A. County jail right now. I'm sure he's going to get bailed out, and we'll see where this goes. How about that standard of proof?
Well, wasn't the standard of proof for a lot of people that if a woman says it, it's got to be true? So I'm sure that that's not working too well for him right now. Yeah, we'll have to see where it goes, and we'll have to see if it's true or not true. I know he's involved in a very nasty divorce situation.
Sure.
So it could be true, it could not be true. I'm not going to sit and judge until I know the facts, Ron.
Exactly, and neither am I. I just find this amusing.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
This is Dr. Ron Martinelli, forensic criminologist and host of A Thread of Evidence on America Out Loud. If you'd like to find out what forensic criminologists really do in the field, and you're tired of the false narratives about law enforcement and want to unpack the cases that I've worked throughout the nation, then please pick up a copy of my new book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, on sale right now at Amazon.com. That's The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police at Amazon.com. So I know you've been following this whole Jim Acosta thing from CNN and him getting booted out of the White House press corps inside the White House, not out of the press corps, but inside the White House, had his press credentials removed from him. And I think for good cause. I just wanted to hear what you had to say about that.
Well, I think it was for good cause as well. And I think that with the temperament of the press in that press room with Sarah Sanders and with President Trump, I mean, I could stand seeing a few more of them revoked, because this should be a place, it should be an open, free press type of place, yes, but it should also be a respectful place and respectful of the office of the presidency, and it has not been. And Jim Acosta has made everything about himself and about CNN, more about himself really than about CNN, and his entire way of speaking to the president is disrespectful, aggressive, and accusatory, and it's not attractive. It's not news, other than the news he wants to make about himself. And I don't think that that should be the case.
Well, no, I agree with you. Being in the White House is a sacred place, and there have to be some guidelines of behavior. There's guidelines of behavior everywhere we are. There's guidelines of behavior in the courtroom. There's guidelines of behavior in the boardroom. And when you are in the White House and you are addressing the president of the United States, the leader of the free world, probably, arguably, the most powerful man in the world, it's okay to personally disagree with this guy, but not in public. Ask your question, which he did. Allow the president to answer, which he did. And
twice.
Right, and let's move on. And I'm glad you said a couple of times that it was all about him. I absolutely agree, Lynn. This is not journalism. This is narcissism.
Well, he's pontificating and expressing his views rather than asking a question so that people can make their own judgments, which is how the news should be. He wants to make your judgment for you, and he wants to cram it down the president's throat. And I don't like the tone, and I don't like what I see.
Well, he's exactly right. He's pontificating. He's making statements. Look, you're not there to make statements about policy, okay? You're there to report the news. Ask a question, report the news. We don't need opinion during a press conference. And I'll tell you what, I am so disappointed with his colleagues in the Washington press corps for backing this guy's play, including Fox News. All right, I'm so ticked off about that because, you know, do you want to have a complete lack of decorum every single time there's a press conference? This is a slippery slope. Where are you going to go next with this once we've done this? So he got appropriately slapped as far as I'm concerned. I hope they never give him back his press credentials. I agree with you. I think other people need to go. And I'm going to tell you what, I'm going to write a column about this. And I think the time for these daily press conferences should be at an end, okay? Because nobody is going to give President Trump or any of his press secretaries a break. So why do you need to be on television asking those questions? If it was me, I would only have impromptu sessions with the press when I'm walking back and forth from my helicopter, and the rest of the time they can do a daily briefing, a newsletter, an electronic newsletter, allow the press to ask whatever questions they want, document the answers, and move on. I think that these press conferences, except for important events and emergencies, I think their time is ended. And I'll tell you what, if I was king, if I was president of the United States, I wouldn't hold them because you're getting nothing out of it.
Well, and the disrespect is what really bothers me. I think it bothers a lot of people. And I am disappointed that Fox News agreed. Their take on it is that the passes for working White House journalists should never be weaponized. Well, how do you excuse the weaponization of your journalists against the President of the United States? This is a two-edged sword. It is not one thing and not the other. So President Trump doesn't go after people unless they go after him. And Jim Acosta is always after him. And I agree with you that the disrespect has gotten to a point where I don't think that they should do it anymore. I think that they should just stop these. And
you're in agreement with me.
I am in agreement with you.
You know what? Let me say something else. I am tired of hearing this word weaponized, especially from people that know nothing about weapons and weaponization and have never been to war. This is like them trying to place themselves in a position of being soldiers or something like that. Look, you're reporters. Okay, there's a whole bunch of them just like you. The story is not supposed to be about you. It is supposed to be about the story. I know when I took journalism in college and we did reporting, the number one rule that they told us on the first day of journalism school was, it is never about you. It is always about the story. And don't ever get that wrong.
Well, if I were President Trump, I would not show up for these press briefings. And I would use my bully pulpit and talk to the American people and say what you want to say and not let anybody ask questions until and unless they decide to be respectful.
I agree.
And it might take a while for them to cry like babies about it.
Well, you got to treat them like kids because they're acting like kids.
And they will change their tune.
I agree.
But unless you do this, they won't change their tune. And it's gotten out of control.
The behaviorist that I am says that you have to mitigate bad behavior. You have to modify the behavior. And if you empower or enable the behavior only gets worse because they're like children, that none of them act like adults. The ones that I've seen that have been so boisterous, that is not the time nor the place.
Well, here's some more bad behavior that happened. Melania Trump has said a few times recently that she was uncomfortable about somebody that was in the White House, who was the Deputy National Security Advisor, Mira Ricardo. And when Melania Trump was on her way to Africa last month, Melania Trump, I guess somehow the seating got changed on the plane, and there was not room on the plane for Mira and for one or two other people. And it's not uncommon for there to be more than one plane going. So Melania said, just take the other plane. And this lady really got her nose in a little snit, and she threatened to revoke the credentials of the people that were going to be helping Melania on the trip through all the countries in Africa. And that was a direct slap in the face to the First Lady.
Oh, absolutely.
And Melania was really uncomfortable with this person. She made a really big deal about it. And she didn't respect Melania's position as the First Lady.
You know what I find interesting about that? Melania Trump rarely speaks at all. So when she says something, you better pay attention to it, because she definitely has the president's ear, but she is a very reasonable, very calm, very controlled, very intelligent person.
Well, this person has been spoken about for the last number of days that Melania is uncomfortable with her. Well, she just did resign. So I'm glad we don't need that kind of, we have enough of this division in the White House. We don't need any more.
Well,
the people that are supposed to be the just have the back of the president and the First Lady, and they don't, is just extremely frustrating.
We just finished talking about narcissism and Jim Acosta, and it's not about you. And the same thing with this lady and people like her. Listen, you have been given an amazing, favor to an honor to work in the White House on the behalf of the President of the United States and the people of the United States of America. This is not about you. Don't get into these power tantrums and do this stupid stuff. I'm absolutely amazed. And as far as I'm concerned, people that act like that, people that are, we need to have selfless people, people that sacrifice, people that can appreciate the honor of working for the United States government and the president, and just do your job.
Right, and be respectful of the office of the president. And, Melania Trump is no Hillary Clinton. She's not abrasive. She's not a foul-mouthed woman. And she's a very gentle woman. So I don't know why you'd want to run afoul of her, but it didn't work out so well. And people should take note of that in the White House, that sometimes you got to watch out for those quiet ones. They absolutely have their own mind. Well, Ron, speaking of Melania, I have a real frost my socks thing from a woman's point of view. And, we have these women's magazines, and every woman's magazine that I'm aware of is really, really liberal. And here's one that I'm not real familiar with, the Marie Claire magazine, but it's a sister magazine to Vogue, which is a very liberal magazine anymore. So they did a list of 50 influential women and why they were going to vote. Okay, there was not a conservative amongst them. And Melania what, speaking of influential women in the United States, was not even on their list. And here's some more people that were not on the list who I consider extremely influential women.
You know, I'd like to hear who's on your list, and then I want to hear, well, let's start out with who's not on the list, and then tell me who made the list to compare and contrast.
Well, of course, Melania Trump is not on the list. Nikki Haley, one of the most influential women in this entire country.
Oh, in the world. Not on the list. In the world.
Absolutely. Not on the list.
Amazing.
Yeah. Let's see. Kellyanne Conway, extremely influential woman.
President spokesman.
Influences to the presidents, right? She won the election for President Trump, the two of them together, but she was extremely influential. How do you leave her off the list? Ivanka Trump, a very business-oriented woman, an entrepreneur, an author.
Vivacious, very goal-oriented, has done some tremendous things on the president's behalf. Even on the list.
No. Sarah Sanders.
Well, I knew poor Sarah, and she's done such an amazing job, but everybody dumps on her because she's the president's press secretary, press spokesman, and controls the press corps there. So they're going to dump on her.
She is one powerful, upstanding lady.
Absolutely.
So
extremely intelligent.
I admire her a great deal.
Extremely.
So the president of the Heritage Foundation, who happens to be a black woman, K. Cole James, not on the list. Now, you would think that with all of their racist comments that they call us, that they would have a woman like this, very upstanding leader in the community and in America, in all of America, K. Cole James. Senator Joni Ernst, the Republican senator, the first woman from Iowa elected to Congress, not on the list. And you know Maria Bartiromo,
I love
Fox
her.
News.
I love her. She's fantastic.
She's absolutely excellent on the financial station, but she goes between both the Fox Business and the Fox News. And, she's just brilliant, and I love her take on everything. Representative Marsha Blackburn in Tennessee, they're a Tennessee Republican.
And she's one of my favorites.
Yeah, who just
got reelected.
Is a member of the U.S. House, and yes. Penny Young Nance, most people don't know it, but the largest organization centered on women and public policy is not Planned Parenthood. It is Concerned Women for America, which is a conservative group. Candace Owens, an extremely well-spoken communications director for Turning Point USA. A young black woman who is conservative but didn't make the list for Marie Claire.
And we see her often on Fox News. And
love her. She's so well-spoken.
Very articulate.
And somebody else who's very influential, who certainly was influential
this year
to Judge Kavanaugh, is Senator Susan Collins, who did not make the list. These women are just a few of the women, and I'm sure that there's many more. I'd like to hear who you might have in your thoughts. But these are definitely women who deserve to make the list of the most influential women in the country.
So pray tell, who did make the list?
Well, I hate even talking about that because I'm so disgusted with this and so angry about it. These women, in my opinion, don't hold a candle to the women that I just mentioned. But, of course, you have Hillary Clinton.
Well, yeah, she's influential. You can't deny that. But in sort of a bad way. It's going to be interesting if she runs for president in 2020 because there's so much pushback coming back from people in her own party, the majority of which are women. But we'll see where that goes.
Well, you have somebody like Chrissy Teigen, okay, a model and an actress, right?
John Legend's wife.
John
right?
Legend's wife.
The singer.
This is not a role model for people.
How is she influential? I don't understand. If the bar is being influential, and her what does she influence? I'm not getting this. Does she influence anything civilly, anything governmentally, anything on the world stage? Does she do something good that benefits other people in this country or internationally? I mean, what kind of bar are we setting here? Who else is on this list?
Elizabeth Warren.
Oh, sure.
Dr. Leanna Wen, the president of Planned Parenthood. You have Arianna Huffington, Huffington Post.
I don't like Arianna Huffington, but I will say, because she is the CEO of the Huffington Post, she is a media influencer. There's no doubt about that.
Chelsea Clinton.
Oh, I see nothing there as far as influential whatsoever.
Sharon Stone, actress.
Another person, there's nothing there.
Tory Burch, fashion designer. I mean, these people don't hold a candle to the people that we just spoke about, Ron. This is very, very... Jennifer Garner. I love her to pieces in her acting. What is she doing on this list of influential people?
I'm not so sure how these people influence anybody. So I'm trying to figure out how they set the bar again. I don't mean to be redundant, but how do they set this bar?
Well, isn't it interesting that they have Kirsten Gillibrand, the U.S. senator from New York, but they don't have the Republican senators?
Right.
You know? So, yeah, this is... If anybody that I know gets this magazine, they need to trash it right now, because this is just ridiculous. It's so one-sided. And this is not... It's not fair for journalists. It's not fair for America for things to be just viewed through one single lens.
I agree.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
As former law enforcement officers, we know that your life and the lives of those you love and work with can change in an instant when you encounter an active shooter.
Unfortunately, in today's world of uncertainty, encountering an armed active shooter can have deadly consequences. That's why the key to survival is training and preparedness.
And that's why we want to invite our listeners to seriously consider taking our Response to Active Shooter training course.
Violence can happen to you anytime and anywhere, and when you least expect it. Having a response and survival plan and engaging it can be the difference between life and death for you or a family member.
Our Response to Active Shooter courses are customized for the corporate, school, church, restaurant, and small business environment at a reasonable budget that fits your needs.
So don't put this life-saving training off because you don't think it will ever happen to you. We call those people victims.
Our Response to Active Shooter instructors are all nationally renowned tactical law enforcement experts who will guide you through the life-saving protocols you'll need to survive an active shooter event.
So be a victor, not a victim. Go to ResponseToActiveShooter.com to learn more today.
Remember, that's all one word, ResponseToActiveShooter.com, and be safe out there.
Well, Lynn, I'm rounding the bend with my last cup of coffee, and as a behaviorist, I wanted to point out a very interesting article in the New York Post that says that science says that liberals, not conservatives, are more psychotic. So apparently, the American Journal of Political Science did an often quoted study back in 2012. As a matter of fact, it's been republished and requoted over 45 times, that said that conservatives had traits more leaning towards psychotic behavior.
So we're the psychos, is what you're
right?
saying.
Yeah, so the conservatives were the psychos. But now they've had to apologize, and they're completely redoing their analysis, and now They've come to grips with the fact that it is actually liberals that demonstrate far more psychotic traits. So anyway, I just thought I'd just throw that out there. Probably lose a lot of my liberal friends, but just putting it out there. It's not me. Don't kill the messenger.
One just has to look at every single person that is challenging their election as a Democrat right now. There's not the Republicans are not challenging they're conceding when they lose, but none of the Democrats are conceding when it's close. They're all fighting. So anyway, from time to time over our lives, there have been predictions about the future. So do you remember at Disneyland? I don't know if you remember, but they had that future.
The House of the Future?
Yeah, that was so cool.
That was... Do you remember how it was shaped and everything?
Yeah.
It was like shaped in an X, right? Or remember it had four different areas?
Right.
And you'd go into the living room. I'll never forget this. I was just a little kid. And they had a telephone with a TV picture. And you could call people and look at them on the TV phone, right? And I thought, oh, my God, that's awesome. Look at that.
Yeah.
I think we call that a cell phone now.
Yeah. Well, and now, I mean, now that whole thing is gone, but I really loved it, too. I wish that they would have updated it to, like, say, another, 50 years from now and see what they thought. But there are some predictions that have been made about the future in 2020, predictions that were made many years ago that I'm not so sure how they're going to work out at this point, because we're almost to 2019. We're only a year away from 2020. And I'm not so sure that these predictions are going to come true.
Well, can I ask one question? Is Al Gore there with global warming? Is he there on that list?
Well, Al Gore still thinks that there's a lot of global warming.
Oh, yeah, I mean,
although we can talk about a study that just came out that said that the global warming people did their math wrong, and they admit it, and there's not the global warming that they say that there was because they... Oh, by the way, did the math wrong.
Well, you're not going to hear that in the mainstream media.
No.
And I just mentioned Gore because I know he's kind of cocky after having invented the internet.
Yes, well, that's true. Well, I don't know who said these things, but let's see where we're at with our predictions for 2020 that happened some time ago.
Go ahead. I love to hear this stuff.
Well, they said that we will, by 2020, have ape chauffeurs.
What?
Apes.
Ape, monkey, monkey, ape, yeah. Mammals,
yes.
Chauffeuring us?
Yes, that the apes would be bred to perform these kinds of tasks and do tasks around the house and be chauffeurs and
like,
so forth.
Like Planet of the Apes, right?
Kind of
only
like
in
that.
A bad way, right?
Yeah, and they thought that the use of a well-trained ape as family chauffeurs might reduce auto accidents. So I don't know about that, but... I don't think that one's going to come true by 2020. They also predicted that all roads would be tubes by 2020. So there wouldn't be asphalt roads anymore with the potholes and the rush hour gridlock. They would all be tubes, a network of pneumatic tubes.
So what, under the ground or on top of the ground? And it would be what? Cars pushed by air?
It's not real clear, but pneumatic tubes would be cars that would be pushed by air somehow. And,
okay.
And just kind of, I guess you get in there in some little vehicle and you get whooshed to your destination.
Okay.
Yeah, good luck with that. We can't even get the Disneyland monorail on the streets of Los Angeles, so I don't know. They predicted that everything would be made out of steel by 2020. That the baby of the 21st century would be rocked in a steel cradle, and the dad would be in a steel chair, and you'll have a steel dining table, and the boudoir would be equipped with steel furnishings.
Now, let me ask you, did they have the year that that kind of prediction came out, or these are just a compilation of different predictions?
Well, this one happened to be in 1911.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know all of them, but I did know that one. They also predicted that by 2020, and they actually predicted this in 1997, we would make it to Mars.
Oh, we are still far away from going to Mars. I don't think you'll see us doing anything in that regard for at least another 10 years.
Yeah, even NASA predicts that the earliest that they could possibly get to Mars is 2030.
Yeah, okay. Well, so, I'm not too far off. That's instead of 10 years, that's 12 years. Okay.
Yeah. Instead of 1 year, it's 10 or 11 or 12 years.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is what I said, Linder.
Oh, sorry, Ronnie. women will all be built like wrestlers by 2020. I'm still waiting to get there. I know it's not working out for me.
You want to be built like a wrestler?
I actually don't.
You know, the longer we are married, the more I actually find out about you. And to be honest with you, Lynn, some of the stuff you scare me.
Well, they thought that they would have this balanced ration of vitamins and minerals and proteins that would just build up their bodies. It sounds like something like steroids to me. I don't know. Well, here's a prediction that, tell me what you think, computers will not catch on.
Oh, wow. Tell me what year that was.
1943.
Okay. All right.
The one-time president of IBM, who was Take Thomas Watson, he said that the future consumer demand for his company's products was limited at best.
Wow. You know, that's interesting. I don't know what's happened to IBM, but I remember when I lived in Redwood City, that was the one of the headquarters for IBM, and then they moved down south to the Almaden Valley and San Jose, and IBM, of course, by that time just exploded. I'm not so sure where they are right now, but I think they were, you know, whoever said that we wouldn't have computers today was obviously pretty well wrong.
Well, the other guy that actually predicted that in 1977, Ken Olson, who was the founder of Digital Equipment Corporation, said that there is no reason anyone would want a computer in their home. So, pretty wrong about that. That goes right up there with the ape chauffeurs, I think. I don't know.
Working at computers.
I don't really understand this one, but somebody predicted that we'll eat candy made of underwear. I'm not really understanding.
Well, it had to be a candy maker, sort of a sick candy maker. Where do you find this stuff, Lynn?
Well, on my computer, which should never be in my home. Yes. Arthur Clarke, he was a futurist. He believed that the boring houses of 1966 would be radically different by the time we reached 2020. And he thought that the houses would kind of be flying houses. They'd have no roots tying it to the ground. And we wouldn't have water pipes, drains, power lines, all those things. That the house could be moved anywhere on Earth at the owner's whim.
And for some context, Arthur Clarke, was he not the person that wrote 2001, The Space Odyssey?
I do not know the answer to that question.
I think it was Arthur Clarke.
Well, he was a science writer, so that's very possible. But he thought we'd be much further with these flying houses than we certainly are today, because my house definitely has pipes and things like that. Well, this one may have come true for some people.
What do you got?
One of the predictions was that everyone will be drunk all the time.
Well, but yeah, with some of my college friends, I don't think that's changed.
There was a Serbian engineer and inventor, Nikola Tesla. Interesting that his name is Tesla, huh?
Right.
Predicted in 1937 that within a century, coffee, tea, and tobacco will be no longer in vogue, but alcohol will still be used. He said that it's not a stimulant, which it's really not.
It's a depressant.
Right? But a veritable elixir of life. So everybody should be drunk all the time. Don't think that one came too true. I don't really get this one so much, but this one, they predicted that there will be blood banks for teeth, that they have blood banks where plasma can be donated, which we do have, but they thought that there would be tooth banks, too, where you could go get a tooth, I guess.
Well, we definitely don't have that, but what we've got now is 3D imaging technology where they can literally build a whole mouthful of teeth in minutes.
Well, you know, that's absolutely true. So even though it wasn't true to how they thought of it, this one really did come true. There's not blood banks for teeth, but they can absolutely make you new teeth and implant them in your mouth so that you have them for the rest of your life.
Well, sure. We see all those commercials on television try to do it in one day or something. I'd like to see what that looks like, but certainly we have the technology right now. And I've watched some of the science shows on dentistry now, and it's absolutely amazing and has really brought the cost down on, with respect to dental implants and, all of those things to make people look better. Yeah. And I'm all for it.
Well, they thought that back in 1959 that mail would be delivered by rockets. So mail could be delivered from, say, California to New York in a very fast time by rockets. But what's really interesting, this didn't happen. But what did we get instead that's even faster?
The internet.
Email, sure. Yep. So mail, because regular mail through our U.S. Postal Service is still as slow as it can be.
Boy.
And I think it's getting slower, not better.
Nah, don't even start me there.
Well, somebody predicted that the letters C, X, and Q would no longer be part of the alphabet by 2020.
Well, that's dumb. Those are very important letters and used to form a myriad of words.
Well, they thought that they were unnecessary and we would have condensed words and a condensed alphabet.
Well, you know, that part of it's not wrong. If you take a look at how the kids text message each other and what they use for initials and things, some of it is so hard I can't even decipher it, but the kids pick it up really quick. So that wasn't really untrue. They're doing that now.
Yep. Well, in 1913, Gustav Bischoff, who was the president of the American Meatpackers Association, had a very grim outlook on diet in America. And he thought that we would no longer have meat, that we would all be vegetarians by 2020. And his solution for that, the only way to save humanity, was to educate the American farmer to the necessity of raising more cattle. And somehow or another, that worked. Because I have to tell you, living in the heartland of America as we do, there is cattle everywhere. and I love it. I mean,
yeah. And you know what? Not only cattle, but buffalo. And yesterday, when we were driving to Houston, we passed a herd of buffalo and right off the 10, and I had to look twice. And I said, are those buffalo?
Yeah, they were amazing. And you know, we passed a lot of cattle and a lot of beef cattle.
No, we got cattle all around here. We live on a ranch, for God's sakes.
It's quite nice. So I think that we don't have a shortage of beef in 2020. Well, somebody else predicted, who was a designer, that we would be wearing disposable socks every day, and we would have antenna hats. So I guess that we were going to, I don't know what we were going to do. I guess we snatch radio waves out of the air so that we can hear. Now, in a way, we do that our cell phones.
Well, full disclosure, Linda, when I was a police officer and you'd come in contact with someone that was a whack job, we used to sort of make aluminum antenna for them, okay? I'd get fired today for that. But it kept them happy. It kept them happy.
And I remember that there are people who felt that they needed that, and that's no joke.
No, that's very true. Yeah, I can gone to more than enough houses where people thought the radio waves were penetrating through. And in those days, we would just tell them, you can't fix them. You can only try to help them a little bit. And we'd say, hey, put a little aluminum foil on your windows and just bounce those radio waves right back out. You know, they didn't have the medications that they had today.
No, but it's interesting because we do have cell phones that can pick up really everything. I can pick up the internet, it can pick up music, and can pick up just all kinds of things. So it's fascinating.
Well, can I digress for a second, but stay right in there? Did you see the murder case? It's a double homicide case involving a Amazon Alexa.
Oh, I did.
And the district attorney's office is pursuing a search warrant for an Amazon Alexa that was in a house at the time that a double homicide occurred. And they believe that machine heard the homicide taking place, and they're going back and forth with Amazon because Amazon wants to protect the Alexa. Isn't that interesting?
Well, it is. And you know what? We'll have to talk more about that because there's going to be probably some court cases over that.
Yeah, but continue on.
Yeah, I want to tell you just a few more that are interesting. Somebody predicted that we will all have personal helicopters by 2020, which certainly hasn't happened.
But you know what? I will tell you that they are doing a phenomenal job because every once in a while on LinkedIn or Facebook, I watch these videos where they are making, you know, car airplanes and they've miniaturized the helicopters. And I will tell you what, within the next 20 years, I bet you it will not be uncommon to see helicopter-like devices like quadcopters and people flying those things around. I'll bet you'll see it in the next 20 years.
Well, that could happen. Somebody predicted that the human foot would become just one big toe, which is really interesting. This is a guy that was giving a lecture to the Royal College of Surgeons in 1911.
Okay, well, 1911. And, yeah. He was also the steel guy, right?
Yeah, he just thought that we wouldn't need those toes anymore, but it'd be kind of hard to walk without them. Another guy predicted that eating would no longer be necessary, and we would just get our food through some nanobots entering the bloodstream and feeding the cells, and that just doesn't sound like a whole lot of fun to me. And, you know, that's most of them. Most of the things that people predicted, there's a couple more. The last one being nobody works and everybody's rich.
I love that.
That didn't happen.
I love that. And we'll just end that coffee conversation on that optimistic note.